friend, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, we got another rainy day here in Illinois. We got July 4th all coming up and around. But as we remember military operations and what all this is about and the original stuff back in July of 1776 and everything that's coming around, the 200th anniversary in 1976 and it continued on, one thing we have to remember, the military operations, no matter where they are, have resulted in catastrophic health and environmental effects. We know today because of the use of depleted uranium, Iraq, Afghanistan, the Balkans, Somalia, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and all over are totally trash as a result of what happened. But more important than that, what we have to remember is the contamination extends well beyond the battlefield. Tonight we're going to talk about the problems and the contamination of military operations in Hawaii. And to talk about this, I've invited an incredible group of individuals, and we'd like to start off. Jim, are you there?
I'm here, Doug. Aloha from Kurdistown, Hawaii. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you. Jim, I'm going to let you kind of lead the thing tonight. You know everybody and know what's happening. Go ahead and explain what is happening and why this is so critical, what needs to be done, what should be done, and what has and has not been done, sir.
Well, I'll start it off, and I hope others are joining us here that they can add their thoughts as well. But basically what we're dealing with is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is preparing to issue a license for military bombing of radiation-contaminated bases in Hawaii and 16 additional installations throughout the United States that contain up to 8.8 tons of depleted uranium, and that was used simply for one DU spotting round that we now know of. That's the Davy Crockett. As you know, Doug, there are lots of other DU munitions in the U.S. arsenal. And the NRC, though, is only dealing with the Davy Crockett. So 8.8 tons of it have been used at these various installations around. It's technically called a license to possess. Now, here where I live on the island of Hawaii, we have right in the center of the island this very large 133,000-acre Pohakuloa training area. And it's been bombed for 60 years. They used this depleted uranium starting in 1961. And they're continuing to bomb up there at a base that's known to be contaminated with radiation. The NRC and the Army have agreed to only restrict 500 acres of the 51,000 acres in the impact area from bombing. So that leaves over 50,000 acres that will be bombed, and it's very likely, in my judgment, that the military used far more than just one single DU weapon system, the Davy Crockett. That's what we caught them with, but it's likely they use a lot more, and that entire impact area is likely contaminated, and they're bombing the area, which risks spreading this radiation around, endangering the health and safety of our residents and visitors and even the troops that train there. So this has national implications. It's really global implications because, as you mentioned, the U.S. used depleted uranium all around the world. But here in the United States and in Hawaii, which some of the participants will talk about, this is really an occupied, independent nation here. And by the way, the U.S. used depleted uranium in training in Korea, Japan, and Germany, these Davy Crockett rounds, as well as Hawaii and 16 other places in the United States. So we have a big problem here, and we've been getting stonewalled by the Army in all the questions we ask, and also now with the NRC. I'm beginning to learn that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the regulators of the nuclear industry, are very similar to the bank regulators. They're really made up of the inside people of the industry, and we're not getting a lot of cooperation here to really stop the live fire, do comprehensive independent testing and monitoring to determine the full extent of the contamination, and then force some kind of cleanup or remediation to help protect the health and safety of the people. So maybe there's a summary of some of the issues we face, but maybe some of the other participants here could share their particular insights as well.
Isaac, Ku, Lonnie, or Lance, are you any there also?
This is Lanny Sinkin. I'm on board here. I'd like to touch on a couple of things that Jim said. One of the key words he used was caught. The military was using depleted uranium without the proper licenses or permissions from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the citizens of the island of Hawaii caught them by using radiation monitors and doing research. They uncovered what had been going on for many years, and they brought it to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and said, hey, you guys should be on top of this and doing something about it and having it cleaned up. These guys have been operating, the military has been operating illegally for decades. So when the NRC addressed the problem, what they did basically was issue them a license to have the depleted uranium in place with no regulations on cleaning it up or doing anything with it, basically giving them a license to leave it out laying on the ground where it is now and or not bomb it, depending on where it is. And we don't even know where all of it is. And this is kind of a typical way the Nuclear Regulatory Commission operates. I had occasion to participate in licensing hearings for nuclear power plants over a 10-year period and represented citizens groups in licensing hearings before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And we all fondly call them the NRC, meaning nobody really cares. That's the attitude we found. They would go on enforcement or inspection up to a point. And then if it got really serious and there was a threat to the license or some threat to the ongoing operation of the plant, they would get not serious. They wouldn't deny a license. They wouldn't fire, make people get fired, any of that kind of stuff, or put people in jail for the things they were doing. They were just basically an industry arm to give a legitimacy to the idea that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission somehow is protecting the public by regulating nuclear power. It's a joke. It's not real. But they continue to do so to this day.
Yeah, it's been terrifying because once I was brought into this and found out about it from my cousin over there, I don't know, Lance, if you're on the air, have it join us, it'd be great, fantastic. But what was so terrifying is all the Army regulations and everything that I wrote that General Eric Shinseki implemented, we go back many, many years, just said that you can't use all these munitions in non-combat operations. You can't use them in populated areas. Hawaii, as we need to understand, need clearly understand, is an occupied nation, okay, that was seized and everything. When the U.S. Marines originally invaded and seized Hawaii, I think that was in about 1892 or 1893. But then what we have, all the contamination, not less from uranium munitions, but all the chemical and biologic weapons that have been used there, and all the conventional explosives, and then we have all of the gross contamination in the waterways and everything else from military operations. So it's really a disaster and a travesty of every way that I've been able to find out. When I challenged the military on this, very specifically said, you must clean up all the contamination, both at Schofield Barracks on the main island where the training was done, also, is it was roadblock, and they just continuously disregard their own Army regulations, 700-48, and all the protocols. So again, we're seeing complete arrogance, and this is what frightens me that goes along, and all you guys have seen it, the infamous Los Alamos Memorandum that I was given in March of 1991, which ordered me and everybody in the military to lie, cheat, and steal, and deny any of the health and environmental effects, not only of radioactive munitions, but all military operations. So it's just turned into a nightmare all the way around. Lanny, I mean, what is the current thought as far as, you know, the nation between the United States and Hawaii and between the actual king and the royal family in Hawaii, and how does that all come into play?
Well, 1893 is the year where the diplomatic and military representatives of the United States government in the Kingdom of Hawaii conspired with a group of sugar growers who didn't want to pay tariffs to the United States to overthrow the kingdom government and establish a government whose sole purpose was to have the Hawaiian Islands annexed to the United States so the sugar growers wouldn't have to pay tariffs because they'd no longer be in a foreign country. That's a simplified version, but a very close truth to what happened. And the United States eventually, 100 years later in 1993, apologized to the Hawaiian people for the illegal overthrow of their government stated that they never gave up their sovereignty and that they were an ongoing existing people. And other than apologize, that's all they did. So there's been a sovereignty movement, an effort to restore the nation of Hawaii ever since the day Queen Liliuokalani was overthrown. It gained a lot of strength when the apology resolution was passed in 1993. And now we're getting very close to, I think, the time when something substantial is going to happen. I work with a man who thousands of people now believe is the king who's come to restore the kingdom. His name is Edmund Kalihi Silva, Jr. He has been working diligently to get the wisdom of the elders involved, to put out a plan and a vision for the restored nation of Hawaii. If people want to read the documents, they're posted on a website, kingdomofhawaii.info, I-N-F-O. And we're moving point by point with the United States. That they have no ground to stand on to say that the overthrow was in any way legal. They've already admitted it was illegal. They just don't want to give up Hawaii because Hawaii is the forward base for the projection of United States power into the Pacific. So from an imperial perspective, Hawaii is a very important post. The fact that the people are now saying they want to restore the Kingdom of Hawaii is not comfortable for the government of the United States. How we can move through this process in a peaceful transition, it's going to be complicated. I do, however, believe it's going to happen.
One of the things, again, with all the military, as a wind down in Iraq and Afghanistan, and as we all know, and I was involved in this, it's all been a charade totally over oil and mineral resources and everything else. But now the military is talking about putting a substantial shift of the focus to the Pacific. And as you just said, that makes Hawaii the absolute essential element for everything that they want to do for projection of power. But then it comes back to the same thing. As they're going to project their power, now we're looking at military operations in Hawaii and all my visits to Hawaii and having family there and everything else and loving the islands. Even though I'm sitting back here where in Illinois or Minnesota or wherever I happen to be at that given time, we're talking about a pristine environment that already been seriously damaged as a result of all the contamination from military operations. And if the plans are to go forward, it's going to basically totally destroy the pristine environment, the health and safety of Hawaii, isn't it?
Well, I think that to even say that the environment in Hawaii is pristine is no longer true anymore. There has been so much damage done by the militarization in Hawaii that the United States should not be surprised that thousands of people in Hawaii would like to be independent of the United States. The United States has trashed Hawaii, and they've come into a culture that had what was obvious as aloha, which is an outreach of love. You use the word love, and I think that's a key word in this whole discussion. The Hawaiian people were a very loving people, and aloha meant that you recognize the divinity of other people and share that pathway of aloha in helping each other unfold the divinity that was within. And the United States came and just simply ignored all of that and made Hawaii a stepping stone for the projection of U.S. power. And they have done it in Kauai, the island of Kauai. They've done it in the island of Hawaii. They've done it in the island of Oahu. We have Ko'olawe, where they bombed the island for decades, cleaned it up a little bit, and then left. And now it's basically being restored slowly by traditional practitioners and others. However, it's a death trap in terms of the amount of munitions that are still left there. And the waters around the island have been dumping grounds for the United States military. So they should have no expectation that people really want to stay and have every understanding of why people for them to go.
Yeah, one of the things I think that most frightening as we try to work, and I know all of us have been directly active in trying to work with the Hawaii Department of Public Health and trying to get them involved, understand the ramifications, and take actions to enforce compliance. Because as you all know, and I know you work with it, the Army Regulation 748, which deals with depleted uranium and radioactive munitions and then up and beyond all of it, absolutely requires the Army and the Department of Defense comply with all local, host nation, state, and whatever laws and regulations for environmental safety, health, and protection. But they seem to totally ignore all those and just go on their merry way without any accountability. I think one of the things I think you guys, I'd like to have you explain, and we've talked about this, is the fact that we've got Boy Scout and Girl Scout camps, you know, and all this stuff where the kids go out right into the areas where there is gross contamination. Isn't that true?
Maybe I can respond to that. This is Jim. Unless Isaac Harp, if Isaac Harp is on the line, I'd like to hear from Isaac, also known as Pucka. If Buck is not there, I'll respond. You know, this base in the center of Hawaii Island, Puhakoloa, there's a highway which has been greatly improved in the last decade or so that travels between the Hilo, the east side of the island, and the west side, the Kona side. It goes right through. For years, it went right through the base. There were signs along that highway that said, caution, live fire overhead. They were actually blasting howitzers and other kind of munitions right over the road that people were traveling on. And just off the base, actually adjacent to the base, surrounded by the base because it's been expanded in recent years, is a Girl Scout camp. And this is directly downwind of the impact area where now it's confirmed depleted uranium munitions are used. So we're dealing with a situation that is quite bizarre, this image of Hawaii, paradise of the Pacific, and yet we have this gross pollution, as you've described, with all the various munitions on land and sea there, and even a Girl Scout camp right adjacent to the base. And the health department that's supposed to be standing up for their citizens' health and safety, they've really been another branch of the military because it's official state policy to support the military because it's such an economic engine in Hawaii. So it's basically turned away from really forcing any kind of environmental or public safety concerns out of taking a back seat to the economic, the expenditures brought in by the military here in Hawaii. So it's a crazy situation.
This is Lanny again. I think if you dig under what Jim just said, I think at the core, the state of Hawaii government knows that it's not legitimate, that it was put in place based on an illegal overthrow of the government in 1893. Nothing since then has been legal. So you have an illegal government in place only because there's a major U.S. military presence. So they're totally at the whim of the military. Whatever the military wants, they will give them because that's the only basis for their authority.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's extremely important, and I've shared this with you and would like to share this with all our listeners and everything, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, again, dealing with all this, they have a reference, approaches for the remediation of federal facility sites contaminated with explosives or radioactive waste. And this is an EPA guideline very specifically how to clean it up. It's established many, many years ago. And it's EPA document 625R-93013. And it was dated September 1993. Now, when I was director of the Depleted Uranium Project and putting all this work together, we encountered this because we had to clean up all these things. So whether in Vieques, Puerto Rico, which is totally trash and very similar to Hawaii, again, another sovereign nation that's been seized, and then we have Hawaii, the Environmental Protection Agency guidelines are very clear, as are the Army regulations, on what the health and environmental effects are and total environmental remediation. It wants to be done. When we look, and you guys have all reviewed this, and I know we presented it to the Hawaiian Department of Public Health, Mr. Gary Gill, very specifically, the J. Edgar Wakayama from the Pentagon is very concerned about the health and environmental effects of all the depleted uranium munitions. But most specifically, it says they're worried about all the children eating, playing, and all this stuff that happens from the contamination that blows. And this doesn't go just 1 or 2 miles. This stuff goes hundreds of miles and thousands of miles. So, again, the regulations are very clear, but as we have seen with all this stuff, they're just thoroughly disregarded. And for me, that is just, I can't even begin to grasp how difficult it is for me to understand why anybody would take these stands other than in order to have extraordinarily combat-killing capability and sustain the training and necessary use. They just totally disregard what's happened all over the world and all over the nation. How does the average person, do they understand what's happening and what needs to be done and what the cost could be for Hawaii unless something's changed?
It's Jim speaking here. This depleted uranium, it's a difficult issue because you can't see it, you can't taste it or smell it. It's invisible. And for most people, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind. Now, recently, I've been contacted by several people that are having uranium showing up in their urine tests. And so this is getting a concern that I've had 3 MDs and a naturopathic doctor here on the east side of the Big Island report that they have patients with uranium in their urine. One doctor said he has a cluster of patients. So we've been pushing to have more testing done, and the health department is not cooperating to have this done, nor is the Army. Recently, Isaac Harp and I met with the commander at Pualkalaw, and we put straight to him that as an act of good faith, we asked him to offer uranium urine test to some of the long-term workers at Pualkalaw to see if they have exposure as well. He refused to cooperate. You would think that if they felt they had nothing to hide, they'd be glad to assist their own employees and the troops to have some testing done. But again, we're getting stonewalled at every step of the way by the military, by the NRC, by the state health department. And they're trying to keep this issue, I think, under the rug, because I think it has profound implications for the tourist industry of Hawaii. The military and the tourist industry are so incompatible that if tourists knew there was, or bases where there was extensive radiation contamination, I think they'd have second thoughts about coming to Hawaii. And the predominant winds travel east to west and carry that radiation to the what's called the Kona Gold Coast of the island, where the major tourist high-end resorts are located, where people are spending several thousand a night for a hotel room.
Yeah, one of the things where we look at the health and environmental effects, I'm obviously, as all you know, I'm affected from my use and research and cleaning up and everything from the DU contamination during both Desert Storm and then the DU project for which I was the director for the U.S. Army. But the United States Department of Veteran Affairs, and you guys have all seen this, and we want to make this clear again and go over it, has very specifically stated, and this I'm going to quote, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs Vision 11 distributed booklet, Some Things You Need to Know About Veterans, a Clinician's Guide for Veteran-Specific Issues, in which they state, quote, some of the physical symptoms which may occur as a result of exposure to depleted uranium are sleep problems, mood swings, symptoms in upper and lower respiratory system, neuropsychological symptoms including memory loss, chronic fatigue, immune system dysfunction, skin rashes, unusual hair loss, aching joints, headaches, abdominal pain, sensitivity to light, blurred vision, menstrual disorders, gastrointestinal symptoms, and again, between diarrhea and constipation, nervous system disorders such as numbness in limb, mobile chemical sensitivity, and incredible birth defects, end quote. The Department of the Army in his Wakayama briefing, again, we presented this and the military knows it because it was all in there, totally acknowledges RNA and DNA changes. They thoroughly acknowledge the health effects and the incredible damage to the eye and all this stuff. And they also totally confirm all of the incredible cancers, which is what my team has been dying from, the cancers. I've been lucky, but my team has not. So all the health effects are thoroughly known. And when you combine the health effects of these with all the other contaminants from military operations, whether the inorganic, organic compounds, and all the explosives, it just becomes mind-boggling. And I think, like you said, if the military can keep people from learning about it and keep themselves from being held accountable to comply with their own requirements, they can get away with anything.
They are. And they literally are getting away with anything. And I think you point to, you know, if you think about what is the role of government, why did people set up governments? Governments were set up to protect the people, to encourage them, to nurture them, to make them possible all that is possible. And instead we find these government agencies basically covering their own ass. You know, they don't want to admit they made a mistake. They don't want to clean it up. They don't want to protect the people that are being harmed by it. They want to find some reason not to do anything and try and sweep it under the rug, as Jim said. So when you talk about the EPA regulations, those are federal regulations under which the United States military operates. But they can't just walk away from them and ignore them. When you talk about all the health effects, you're basically talking about radiation poisoning. And that's what it sounds like, all those symptoms. So they know what they're doing, and they've done it deliberately. And the DU information was known years ago. So when they went ahead and used DU in Iraq, they knew that they were building in long-term health effects for the people of Iraq who would have to live with it after the United States military left. But they didn't care about that any more than they cared about Agent Orange in Vietnam and its long-term effects on the people of Vietnam. These are very callous people who are doing what they do. If you want to deal with it at the spiritual level, these are death worshipers.
What do you think, what will it take in order to get the U.S. military and the governments, I mean both at the federal government level and state of Hawaii, to actually finally take action and clean up the mess? And even cleaning up the mess is virtually impossible. I mean, you can comply with the Army regulations, comply with the Technical Bulletin 9-1300-278, the pamphlet, the Army pamphlet 700-48, which deals with cleanup. But what I learned when I developed those is we're talking about only mitigating the hazards, not eliminating the hazards. What do you think it's going to take for the American population and all the citizens of Hawaii to wake up and demand action to clean up these messes and stop propagating it?
Well, I think that the educational work that, that Jim Albertini and all the other folks have been doing is certainly helpful to awaken the public. But if you're expecting a solution from the false state of Hawaii or the occupying nation of the United States for the problems in Hawaii, you're never going to see that. We're not going to solve these problems until the people of Hawaii are once again independent and have no other focus than making their lands healthy again, remediation for all the damage that's been done, and creating the kind of nation that everybody wants.
What type of agriculture and crops? I mean, when people think of Hawaii, I know back here in Illinois, everybody thinks about the beaches and the waterfalls and the tourists are going to see there. But what is actually in Hawaii? Can you talk about the agriculture and all the other stuff and, you know, obviously fishing and everything else? What comes into play in Hawaii that all this stuff threatens to totally destroy and it's already damaged?
Well, Jim, you want to talk about your farm?
Well, you know, I've been an organic farmer here for over 30 years, and you know, when you try to raise crops in a very healthy way, and then you find out that there's depleted uranium contamination, you really have to wonder. But you know, maybe what we need is that this issue has to get brought out more, and there has to be some evidence, some strong evidence that the radiation is affecting people or crops or in the soils, in people's urine. We have to have some more testing to really bring it out that it's not confined to the military base. And by the way, this base is, we're on a volcanic island with mountains. The base is at 6,500 feet. So we're all downhill from this base. And there's one aquifer underneath on the island where all the water that we drink and everything comes from. So sooner or later, whatever takes place on that mountain is going to get down into the water and is going to come downhill to the rest of us. So, you know, you can't escape it on an island. You have to live in a way that is sustainable. And the military is one of the gross examples of what is unsustainable. But I think we need some kind of help in further testing of whether it's people's urine, whether it's air monitoring or soil monitoring, something that documents a spreading of this radiation that then we can really use to get more comprehensive testing. And I think a key thing, which the Hawaii County Council, the local government of this island, called for now 5 years ago, it'll be 5 years this coming week, on July 2nd of 2008, the Hawaii County Council passed a resolution by the vote of 8-1 calling for 8 action plans, but the first one was stopping all live fire at this base that's contaminated. And
and cleaning up the mess that's there. And the military simply has ignored the local call of the Hawaii County Council and the seven other actions which call for monitoring and citizens groups to work with the military to determine the full extent of the contamination, et cetera, et cetera. So we've had action by local government ignored by the military, and what will it take? I don't know. I don't know if Lanny can offer any insights whether any legal actions are possible, but I really think it comes down to the nonviolent direct action of the citizen population here. That's what seems to bring about positive change historically, and maybe we have to move in that direction here to bring this issue to a conscious level where it can't be ignored anymore by the local authorities or the military or the federal authorities. Maybe we have to drive a wedge between the tourist industry and the military to say that we're not going to tolerate this anymore. The issues have to be dealt with.
Well, and you know, the original issue you raised, or the original subject you raised, was the food grown on the island. It's important to remember that before European contact, the Hawaiian nation grew enough food to support hundreds of thousands of people in the islands with no external input. And now, today, 90% of the food eaten in the islands is imported from somewhere else. So the whole Western model of economy took over the sustainable model that was Hawaii. And moving back towards that sustainable model is what we need to do. And that's going to have a number of components. One component is going to be remediation. We have to clean up what's been done, not just by the military, but in the sugar fields and elsewhere, where the land has been degraded, or the water has been degraded, or the air has been degraded. We have to bring it back to full health and vitality. And we have to move towards participation by the people in decision-making that affects their lives. I mean, what does it mean that the Hawaii County Council, elected by the people of Hawaii, 8-1, said to the military, please stop bombing where you have depleted uranium, and please clean up your mess, and the military just ignores them? If you ask the military, what's your purpose, they would say, oh, we defend democracy. Well, here's an 8-1 vote. Go defend that.
So on the ag situation, let me add this comment. You know, Lanny mentioned how Hawaii was a very self-supporting, environmentally sound community here before the overthrow. And then we had 100 years of sugar plantations, which displaced people from the land and grew these monocrops for export and imported all the basic food items. What's left in the place of the years of sugar is really contaminated soil. There's a lot of arsenic in the soil now from arsenic-based herbicides that were used. There's a pesticide showing up in the water from the sugar plantation days. But now we're entering a new phase. Instead of returning to that self-sustainable, growing local organic food for local consumption, we're having this new invasion of the second plantation, and that is by Monsanto and all these genetic engineering companies coming to Hawaii that has a 12-month growing climate to grow seed crops and GMOs that are modified to contain Roundup Ready crops to be marketed all around the world to keep people in bondage, really, having to buy seed from these big companies. So it's a new plantation era that is probably going to have far greater unintended consequences to the land and to the survivability of the planet by the genetic modified crops that are being brought in. Now, again, these crops are being grown extensively on Oahu, on Kauai, even on Maui and Molokai. This coming week, again, July 2nd, Tuesday, there's a bill before the Hawaii County Council to ban any further GMO crops on this island here. The papaya, the GMO papaya, was introduced about 10 years ago. But as far as I know, that's the only crop. There's a few hundred acres of a corn crop, a Monsanto GMO corn crop on the Hamakua coast. But the seed companies haven't come in here in a big way to grow the seed crops for export all over the world. But we're trying to do a preventive action, again, by this bill to ban any further introduction of GMO crops. But we're seeing the big money being spent by big business that want to play with this new second wave of a plantationaire here with Monsanto and the other Syngenta and some of the other major seed companies. So we're facing that. Again, it's another difficulty of trying to move in the opposite direction away from this huge agribusiness to where we're growing small farms, growing good, wholesome food for local consumption, and reduce this importation of 90% of the food that we consume here. So we have those battles going on, as well as this depleted uranium battle.
What is, I think, I know with the time that I've been to Hawaii and everything, and most of my time was spent on the island of Oahu. And, I mean, you can drive all the way around Oahu in a few hours. Can you give people an idea of generally what the Hawaiians consist of geographically? How big are they, and what are the islands, and where are they located, and what happens on each island?
Lanny, why don't you take that?
Well, if I understand your question, you're asking about the differences between the islands? Or
yeah, what are the differences between the islands? How big are they? What happens on each island? I mean, just a general understanding of the topography and everything else, and what the differences between the islands.
Yeah, these are all volcanic islands, so they've grown from the ocean floor and broken through above water and become habitable above the water line. Actually, Mauna Kea on the island of Hawaii is the highest mountain on the planet because it starts at the sea floor and goes up to beyond 13,000 feet above sea level. So on these volcanic islands, you had very rich soil that was and a perfect climate year-round for growing immense amounts of food and sustaining large populations. Some of the islands are older. The islands at the north part of the chain are older than the ones at the south part of the chain. So they're more eroded and have higher cliffs and things like that. In terms of the settlements, they really operated fairly independently of each other for many, many years. The King Kamehameha I did unite all the islands with the support of some of the Europeans helping him do that. And what else can I tell you? We see certain characteristics have developed in the islands. Kauai is sort of considered a pico of the spiritual life of Hawaii. Oahu is the big metropolitan million people kind of gathering place, which it has been traditionally. The island of Hawaii is characterized by a live volcano that has been flowing for quite a while now. So you get to see new land being created every day, and the island is constantly in vibration because the United States Geological Survey has very sensitive equipment, so in any one year you might have 35,000 earthquakes on the island of Hawaii. Those of us living there may feel six or seven of them because the rest are low and small, but it means the whole island is vibrating, which has its own effects on people that live there and what goes on. So it's a very diverse, spiritually diverse, economically diverse, environmentally diverse group of islands. And yet they were all united in one civilization that stretched through the whole archipelago, not just the four or five islands that people are most familiar with. There's a whole archipelago that goes up to the northwest Hawaiian islands that were part of the kingdom. And when the kingdom is restored, all of that will come back into the kingdom. I should mention on the website that I mentioned earlier, kingdomofhawaii.info, there's a document there called the Aloha Aina Project. And it is specifically addressing how can we convert the current exploitive, consumerist civilization that has invaded the islands back to the sustainable, healthy, robust kind of island economy and civilization that was there before the destruction. And there's a specific plan for that to happen. What we've seen over the last 20 years is a reemergence of things that were once suppressed. After the overthrow, the speaking of Hawaiian in the schools was outlawed. Hawaiian social practices like the adoption system were outlawed. All kinds of things. The hula was suppressed. All of these things are starting to make a comeback now. so that there are major hula festivals, there are Hawaiian language immersion schools, there are fish ponds being built. The Hawaiians had a very sophisticated system of building walls out into the ocean and growing and harvesting fish within the ponds. All of those things are coming back. One of the last things that will come back is the political independence of the nation, and that's in the works. It's going to take some time. There'll be a lot of resistance, but it's, I think, an inevitable force that's in the works now. And it's a fascinating place. I mean, the Hawaiian Islands, you see everything going on. The island of Hawaii itself has practically every ecosystem on the planet represented in one part of that island or another.
You can actually go skiing up on top of that mountain, can't you?
You can go skiing up on the mountain when the snow is there and, you know, then take the snow down to the beach and build a snowman on the beach.
What, I mean, again, going back in history, the current president of the United States, obviously he was here in Illinois and a senator for Illinois for just a short period of time and all of a sudden became president. But actually, he actually grew up on Hawaii and went to Punkalo school there, didn't he, in Oahu?
Yes, he went to Oahu and went to Punahou School. It kind of was the white missionary school, so he would have been one of the few minorities at the time at the school. I want to point one more point on that Lanny was thinking about the islands. You know, we're really a small place for people who haven't visited Hawaii. The Big Island, where we live here, it's the land area of the Big Island. It's called Big for a reason. The landmass is twice as big as all the other islands combined. And yet this island is only about 100 miles from north to south and 60, 70 miles wide. So that gives you, for people who live on the continent, when this island is twice as big as all the other islands combined, and it's only 100 miles by 60 or 70 miles, you can get a sense of how small a place we really are. So when you put a base in the middle of that island and bomb it and contaminate it with radioactivity, everybody's going to be affected by that. You know?
Well, Oahu, I know, I mean, just Pearl Harbor continues to be contaminated from all the oil and all those products still leaking in there. I mean, personally, when I was there and looking at it, I saw it happening, and public health told me it's continuing every time when I talked to Gary Gill about all this stuff. Oahu itself, which is obviously the island most people know about and go to, and that's where the tourists go, how big is that island in itself? And besides Schofield Barracks and Pearl Harbor, which are thoroughly contaminated, is there any other areas there on Oahu that have serious contamination?
Well, Oahu roughly would be 30 miles by 30 miles, I would think would be a rough estimate of the island. And Pearl Harbor is on the south shore, only about 6 miles from where the famous Waikiki Beach is located. Pearl Harbor is considered a Superfund site there. There's over 100 military installations on that island of Oahu. And we have documents that the Navy admitted from all the refueling done on the nuclear submarines at Pearl Harbor up until the 1960s, all the contaminated tools and everything that was used in the refueling of those submarines, they were put into 2,000 drums, 55-gallon drums, and just dumped into the ocean floor off the southern shores of Oahu. So right off Waikiki Beach, only a few miles away, are thousands of drums of radioactive waste from the refueling of nuclear ships at Pearl Harbor. And that's just one example. Barge loads of munitions after World War II in Korea were dumped to the ocean floor, not only on Oahu, but on the Big Island here as well. The oceans were used as the dumping ground for all kind of military contaminants, both radioactive and munitions as well. So we have a cesspool, as you were pointing out, of military toxins here. So hopefully we're going to be able to evict this military presence here, but we're going to have a hell of a mess to clean up. I think the island of Kaolawi is the case study. That island is 45 square miles, so roughly 5 by 9. It's off Maui. It's the eighth largest Hawaiian island. And it was taken over in 1941 when Hawaii went under martial law with World War II. And it was going to be used just for the length of the war for a bombing range. Well, when the war ended, the military kept bombing it. And finally, a Hawaiian movement started in the late 1970s, occupying the island. And it still took 15 years or more
But finally, the bombing was stopped through a citizen nonviolent direct action movement. But what was found out was an environmental impact study that was done said that there were more than 80,000 unexploded bombs on the island, 1,000 more in the waters that surrounded the island. And the military got Congress to appropriate $450 million. It was supposed to clean up the island of the unexploded ordnance. Some of those bombs were 20 feet into the earth. Well, the bad news is they spent the $450 million, and instead of cleaning up the entire island of surface ordnance and two-thirds of the island to a depth of 4 feet so they could revegetate the island, they didn't even clean up the surface ordnance on the island. With $450 million, they ran out of money. So over on Kaholavi, when you plant a tree, it's a life-threatening experience. Just by putting a shovel in the ground, you may hit on exploded ordnance. So here on this island where we are, the big island, the military now says they fire 15 million rounds a year up there. All kind of weapons, everything from B-52 bombers fly here from Guam to small arms weapons. But 15 million live rounds a year. So how much unexploded ordnance is going to be left when we are finally able to make them stop the bombing and begin a cleanup process here? We have a multi-billion dollar mess, and with depleted uranium contamination, it's in the tens of billions, and as Doug pointed out, you really can never clean it up fully. Yeah? But we have a super big mess here, and the military is great at making the mess, but they're not very good at cleaning it up. I don't think they had a very good mother to tell them you don't make a new mess until you clean up your old mess.
I know. My whole career, I've been involved in this for many, many years, trying to get everything cleaned up, and my cousin brought me in to help you guys on the island of Hawaii some years ago. Are you in contact or working with Bob Rabbit and all those in Vieques, Puerto Rico that are facing the same issues?
We've had some contact. I know some of the Hawaiian leaders have visited Vieques on numerous occasions because there's a lot of parallels there, yeah.
What would you, we're hoping out, and again, the whole thing, again, thanks to Gary Noll, the Progressive Radio Network. We're talking about education, information, education again, getting what needs out there so everybody knows what the environmental messes are, what the requirements are for health and safety. But again, how I'm looking out, and I know all of us, I'm not saying I've got an answer. I wish I did have an answer other than, again, education, information is getting out. Is how can we, or what more can we do? And I'm asking this not where I'm looking for a direct answer for everybody to think about it. What more can we do to get the U.S. military and the EPA and the Department of Defense and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to start thinking seriously about the health and environmental effects of all our operations and what they need to do to clean this up? To me, it's just one of those things where they continue to do it over and over and over again with complete disregard for the health and safety of everybody. And then the thing that I have found, and I think you guys have found, and you're totally frustrated, I know in our communications, is those people that we should think and we count on to take responsibility and force action seem to be what we will call absent without leave, just avoiding it.
Yeah, it's true on the national level. It was 1 month ago today that we had a teleconference with the NRC. They were sitting comfortably in their Maryland offices with the Army high officials discussing this license for depleted uranium possession in Hawaii. And those of us from Hawaii, we had to participate by phone. First of all, the meeting should have been here. They should have come and had to face the people. But the distance keeps them insulated from really feeling the situation here. Many of these NRC people, they've never even set foot on the island, so they don't know really what they're talking about. So that distance is a problem. But even with the local health department officials, and even good people like Gary Gill, the head of this, the deputy director of the health department, who's head of environmental health, I've known him since he was a high school student from over 30 years ago. And I expect better from people like that to take seriously. But it seems that there's such pressure from the top down, from the military establishment, from the political controls of Washington and all, that even good people seem to be locked in to a subservient role to the military. Now, So I don't know if we can expect anything from the top down. I think it's got to come from citizen action, nonviolent direct action. That seems to be where we need to move, you know, to create a moral crisis that leads to a political crisis where it can't be ignored. I think we have to exercise some of the courage of Ed Snowden, who just recently revealed all these wire taps, how massive it is. He did that knowing full well that he's going to be hunted down, and his life may be taken, or he may spend the rest of his life in prison if the U.S. can get a hold of him. But that's the kind of courage and hoping that when information is made known that people will awaken and will stand up. So hopefully courage can be contagious, and we can exercise some of that similar courage.
Well, I think we're coming on 4th of July is only a few days away. And again, we're looking at all the history of freedom and doing what's right. We claim to be doing everything that's right and to take care of the populations and the world and the environment. But it seems to me as we come on July 4th that the U.S. military and our government leaders are just doing the exact opposite. I mean, we have all the problems all over with all this stuff on the eavesdropping, illegal eavesdropping that's been going on that I personally know of since Bush 1 and the Clinton administration, and actually way before then, but I got directly involved in it at that time. You got misinformation campaigns within the military. Again, those called the CENTCOM engagers, where they contact the media and the press and put incredible pressure on them to disregard all the health and environmental effects. And then we look at the whole thing, and one of the most things that most disturbing to me when I come back on July 4th is we all know, we all had learned when raised up in the United States, again, the Paul Revere on the 18th of April of 75. Well, today, I mean, as you mentioned, Pearl Harbor is a Superfund site, but Concord, Massachusetts, where our nation was born, is a Superfund site for depleted uranium contamination. And to me, that is just absolutely ludicrous beyond all imagination. Where can people get additional information? You've mentioned a website already. Can you go over how do they get in contact with you? How do they get information? Where on the web can they go? Or what can they do to help?
Doug, this is Jim again. I'd encourage people to check out our peace organization website. It's Maluaina. That's MALU-AINA, AINA.org. MALU-AINA.org. We have a lot of information there. And anybody that visits Hawaii, let it be known to your hotels or other people that you've heard about this depleted uranium and you think it's appalling the way the military is treating the residents and the visitors with this contamination.
Lonnie, what is the Kingdom of describe the Kingdom of Hawaii website for us, please.
All right, the Kingdom of Hawaii website right now is basically a collection of documents that set forth the vision and the plan for the restored nation. It also has very special letters that were sent by the king to the United Nations, to Obama. He's done one to Monsanto, basically saying get out of town. It's a very educational website. It has a video message from the king. It's kingdomofhawaii.info, I-N-F-O. And I encourage people to read the documents there, become familiar with the plan and the vision. And if they'd like to join with us, there's a place where they can click on the website to communicate with us. We'd be happy to have people joining in to help us. We're particularly going to need people in the United States who will be communicating with their members of Congress supporting the restoration of the Kingdom of Hawaii. And I think you'll also find we've had people from all over the world coming to the website to see what the king has posted. And we've heard a lot of feedback that it has provided inspiration for people in other countries to pursue sustainable policies and programs like we're developing in Hawaii. I'm glad you had this show. I think it has covered important material for people to be aware of. This story has not gotten out very much. The more it gets out, the more intelligent people can deal with it and create policies to mitigate what's happened or remediate what's happened and build the kind of world that we all want. I think the bottom line for me is we see what's wrong, we know what's wrong, and we know what's right. It's a matter of getting the people out of the way who are addicted to doing it wrong and putting people in place who want to do it right.
We mentioned them. You come back again. Tell us a little about the current king and the queen.
There is no queen in our organization. The king is Edmund Kali'i Silva, Jr. He's been active in Hawaiian politics for a long time. He comes from a royal line that traces back to King Kamehameha I on one side, and the King of Maui as well on the other side. It's a very ancient line, genealogy in Hawaii. He has been meeting with people and developing policies for many years now, biding his time. He knows that the United States is going to oppose in any way possible the restoration of the kingdom. He's had threats on his life. He's had major bribes offered to him to stop doing what he's doing. All that kind of stuff we expect from the national security state of the United States with their allies in the corporate and government world in Hawaii. But he persists in his mission, which he views as a mission, to restore the nation of Hawaii, to restore the kingdom to what it once was, and to be an example for the world of how a people can come together and build the kind of civilization that we know has to happen. I mean, it's sort of like climate change, you know. We all know now that climate change is happening. Here in San Antonio, which is where I am right now, it was 108 degrees yesterday. I grew up in this town, and we never saw 108 degrees. It was 115 or whatever in Tucson. I mean, the planet is experiencing gross changes that are going to cost lives, that are going to do billions of dollars in damages. But the people in power who are responsible for adopting policies that affect us all seem to just turn a blind eye to what's happening because the ones that are funding their elections don't want them to pay attention. Well, that has to change. It all has to change. And we think that the Kingdom of Hawaii is going to be one of the catalysts for showing that change can happen.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you very much for everything you've been doing and the information and the opportunity to have you on my radio show. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we designed this radio show to provide all of the military and everybody the health and environmental effects of military operations, talk about the medical care, talk about the environmental remediation that needs to be done. Because as I think and as these gentlemen have just demonstrated completely, it takes all of us working together to ensure that our planet restores, sustains its health and, you know, health and environment, and that we think about everybody as related to God and what needs to be done. In final closing, as we start to wind down the last couple of minutes, gentlemen, is there anything you'd like to say?
This is Jim, Doug. I want to thank you for having us on. And the issues that we're facing in Hawaii, people on the continent, you know, this Davy Crockett round has been used at 16 other bases in states all around the United States and in Germany, Korea, and Japan. So the U.S. contamination with depleted uranium is massive. And we need everybody to stand up and for peace and justice and cleanup. Thank you.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And ladies and gentlemen, we got a call for action again on Warrior Connection. Have a happy 4th of July, but remember what this is all about. Remember that we must take action to sustain our freedoms, the health and environment, and everything else. God bless America, and take care. Jim, thank you. Lonnie, thank you. And tell everybody out there that's working with you, we're with them.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha.